T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
Thanks for tuning in to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. We had so many requests that we're bringing Dawn Webster back. She'll be with us later in the program to once again give us the details on head lice. We're also going to meet David Palmer. He's with the Rotary Club in New Milford, and he's going to talk about their fight against polio. Intercom's Webster and Vince Sweeney take a look at the upcoming Groundhog Day with an official member of the Inner Circle. Let's get started by meeting the Executive Director of CASA of Luzerne County. He is John Ochakevich, and he's going to tell us about how singers can help the kids. John, could you start off by singing a few bars for us?
You do not want me to sing, Paula.
Well, you're going to be singing for CASA. What's going on?
No, we're
going to
have auditions for our NEPA Sings event with some really fantastic people. This is our third annual NEPA Sings event, and it's been a huge success. The first year, we had about 225 people attend. Last year, 300. We're expecting, hopefully, close to 400 this year.
Whoa!
Yeah, it's really taken off, and it's been a great opportunity to showcase talent in our community, but also to raise some awareness for our program, CASA of Luzerne County.
So who are you looking for? Little kids, big kids, anybody?
Well, first of all, the minimum age is 16.
Okay.
Need to be 16 by the date of our event, which is April 2nd of this year, and there is no maximum age.
Ah, good.
And they're all solo performers, though.
Oh, okay.
And it's also all song. So it can be a cappella, it could be accompanied by music or a track.
Oh, okay. And where's it going to be held?
The Kirby Center for Creative Arts, not to be confused with the Kirby Theater in Wilkes-Barre, but the Kirby Center for Creative Arts is the theater on the campus of the Upper School at Wyoming Seminary in Kingston, a terrific venue. It accommodates about 600 people. So about 400 people on the lower level, 200 on the second level. We're hoping to fill the lower level with 400 people this year.
Woo. Now, what about these auditions?
The auditions are going to be held on Saturday, February the 8th. At the Kirby Center for the Creative Arts as well, the same location. And it's very simple. There is on our website, luzernecasa.org, a NEPA Sings page where you can simply click on and register and submit, and you can have it done in about 5 minutes.
And when you do that, are you looking for a video, you looking for, or just the written information?
Just the written information, a little bit of information about as to why you want to compete and the song you're going to perform.
So this is the third year.
Third annual.
And what has happened in the past? You said it's been growing. There's so many people. What's it been like to say, well, let's go back and say you're at a board meeting with your group and you say, what can we do that's different? And John says.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that one of our sons lives outside of Indianapolis. And we were visiting a few years ago, and I'm reading the local paper, and I'm seeing a CASA program doing a karaoke night. I'm thinking, karaoke seems really kind of hokey, right? But this event drew over 200 people, raised $50,000. So, of course, the wheels start to turn in my head. And I'm thinking, I don't know about karaoke, but one of the maxims, if you will, of our program is lift up a child's voice, a child's life. So I think the first contact I had to pitch this was with Dave Kaharchik. Dave just embraced the idea. And so it took off from there, and it's been so well received. It's a high energy event. It's a unique event. There's really nothing else really done like this in the community. And so I think that has generated the buzz now about the event. And most importantly, some really talented performers coming out and seeing. We've been very fortunate the last 2 years. Our 12 finalists have really performed well and demonstrate a lot of talent.
What is CASA?
Well, CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates. We're one of about 900 programs throughout the United States, with, and there are about 90,000 volunteers, but CASA didn't come to Luzerne County. This is our seventh year, but it has roots in Seattle, Washington over 40 years ago. I think what makes CASA so unique is that when the judge appoints a volunteer advocate that we have recruited, that we have trained, that we have supported, it's to one child and one case. That one-to-one relationship, that there is one trusted adult in that child's life during a period of time when they have experienced abuse or neglect, they've been removed from their home or in foster care, where they then can develop a relationship with this child, that being the volunteer advocate, but more importantly, and equally importantly, I'm sorry, is to then provide information to the judge that she would otherwise not have in these cases. So the idea is to be the eyes and the ears for the judge outside of the courtroom and the voice for the child inside the courtroom.
But the advocate is not a foster parent.
The advocate clearly is not a foster parent. Of course, the advocate is going to spend 10 to 12 hours per month either in communication, contact with the child, but also in communication and contact with teachers, therapists, foster parents, biological parents, all with the idea of assessing what's going on in this child's life so that the advocate can then issue a report and testify in court every 6 months when these cases are reviewed.
Oh.
So the two most important words about court-appointed special advocate is, one, they're a volunteer. They're not paid to do this. They do this because they want to do this. They want to have an impact in a child's life. And secondly, they're an advocate. Their role is to advocate for the safety and best interests of the child during a period of time that is probably so traumatic that on average it's about 19 months in foster care.
Wow.
And currently there are about 516 Luzerne County children in foster care placement.
And how many advocates do you have now in CASA?
We just completed our fall training class with our largest class of 17. So currently we have 70 advocates, and once over the course of the next several months they are appointed to cases by the court, we anticipate we'll be serving probably 75 to 85 children.
That's still a lot of difference there.
Oh, there's a huge difference. But 3 years ago we had 18 advocates serving 25 children. So in 3 years, we've just about tripled our numbers. And you're right, there is a long way to go, but we're on, I think, a very good path of growth. And the community has been so responsive in terms of advocates rising to this occasion from our community, but also members of the community supporting us financially, because we don't receive any county, state, or federal tax dollars. We're entirely self-funded.
And that's why we're going to be singing.
That's why we're going to be having NEPA sings.
And again, John, give us the details on that. The where, the when are these auditions? And you mentioned the fact that you could have a cappella, or so we want to make sure that everybody's ready to go when they get to your Facebook page.
Our website.
Website.
LuzerneCASA.org. You have to register online. There are no walk-in registrations on the day of auditions.
Good to know.
And be prepared to have two songs, one song that you're going to perform for 30 seconds to a minute. And if the judges who are doing the auditions want a second song, they may ask you to do one. So just have a second song prepared.
Oh.
And then we'll compile the scoring. It's a 40-point system. So we have four judges for the auditions. And we'll then identify our top 12 finalists who will then compete at the event on Thursday, April 2nd. At 6:30 p.m. at the Kirby Center for Creative Arts.
So they have from February until April to hone all of their skills.
Absolutely.
Do they, other than the fact that they're, do they have to pay anything in order to get? No?
There is no cost to audition or register.
Oh, okay.
And tickets for the event are $25. We have a light reception prior to the event itself from 5 to 6:30 with some light apps and some beer and wine. You know, we're really pleased for the third consecutive year that both Geisinger and PNC Bank are co-presenting sponsors.
That's great.
And as a further enticement, we have some wonderful prizes. Again, thanks to Sundance Vacations, they are sponsoring our grand prize for the winner, which is accommodations for up to six people, 7 nights at either Hilton Head or Myrtle Beach.
No.
Yes.
Oh, I wish I could sing.
And also the first place winner will receive 3 hours of recording time with Republic Studios and produce a one-track demo.
Wow!
So thank you to Republic Studio. And the second place finisher, again, courtesy to the Mars Group, will receive 2 tickets to a Broadway show and round-trip bus transportation.
You're not fooling around,
so
are you?
Great prizes to entice people to give this a chance.
Wow! If you can even hum a few bars, that's terrific. And if people have competed before, are they allowed back?
They are. In fact, we have registrations going on now, and I believe we have 3 people who competed last year, who have signed up to audition this year.
Terrific. Yeah. You sure you don't want to sing for me a little bit?
No.
No? Oh, okay. All right. Well, I just thought I'd ask. It was because you're in charge.
Well, thanks for the offer, but I don't want people to turn off the interview.
Well, I don't think they would do that. Absolutely not. So we're going to have you back again and talk more about CASA.
Great.
But we want to make sure that, what's the website again?
LuzerneCASA.org.
And that's CASA.
Yes.
Okay. John, thank you.
Thank you, Paula.
A pleasure to meet John, and looking forward to the 3rd annual NEPA Sings. Don't forget, auditions will be on Saturday, February 8th, on the campus of the Upper School of Wyoming Seminary in Kingston. Visit LuzerneCASA.org for more information and how you can get involved. If, like me, you're ready for spring, you're ready to hear what Punxsutawney Phil has to say on February 2nd. We're going to get a sneak preview of Groundhog Day. Intercom's Webster and Vince Sweeney caught up with the stump warden of the Punxsutawney Phil Groundhog Club, Ron Ploucha.
Groundhog Day is February 2nd, so is the Super Bowl. Their problem in Haddon Township, New Jersey, is they can't find a groundhog, so they're going to have a stuffed animal. I don't know if it's like a taxidermy thing or something from the toy store. I'm not sure exactly.
Could be, yeah.
But we've been talking about this, and our own Paula Degnan, who was there last year at
Punxsutawney, front row,
has said that it's something you don't want to miss. And now joining us this morning is a man named Ron Ploucha. Ron, good morning. Now, Ron.
Good morning, guys.
Hiya, Ron.
You're officially connected to Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney. Is that correct?
I am. I am the stump warden of the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club.
Whoa.
We don't use a stuffed groundhog, by the way. We use the real one.
Wow. Well, that's Haddon Township, New Jersey, evidently having a hard time finding a groundhog to cooperate. Well,
Ron is a ranking official.
All right, and I wanted to ask you about that, Ron. Now, you said you're the stump warden in the hierarchy.
Yes.
You're up there, right?
I certainly am.
Where do you stand in succession?
In
when do you...
That's the highest office in the land?
Is it, stump warden?
Not quite. I actually am a former handler of Phil also, so mm-hmm. I was front and center for, 6-7 years here, but I decided to retire from that job.
Uh-huh.
But I'm still the stump warden.
Okay. How much handling does Phil require?
Groundhog Day is not the only day Phil's out in the public. We have public appearances throughout the year with Phil, so he's in high demand. So being handler, it's an everyday, 365-day-a-year job.
All right, he's in high demand, so does he have like a manager like Elvis had Colonel Tom Parker?
But his handlers have a manager, and she's a young woman that tells us where to be, what time to be there, what to wear, how long to stay, and what we can say. So we need that young lady to coordinate everything. Her name's Katie, and she does a great job for
mm-hmm.
us.
And how long has Groundhog Day been going on, first of all? Let me just ask that question.
This will be the 134th year of celebrating.
Whoa.
It actually... I believe in 1886 mm-hmm. was the first formal announcement of Groundhog Day, but in 1887 was the first time that the gentlemen got together and
yeah.
and did a trek, as we do still today.
And it's always been a big event, obviously, but let me ask you, when that Bill Murray movie came out, did you see the leaps and bounds, exponential increase in attendance?
Oh, my goodness, yes. Yeah,
it's a great movie. Great movie.
It made us an international event, to be honest with you. And you can go to Groundhog, or you can go to Gobbler's Knob, where the action takes place any day of the year, and you'll probably find somebody from a foreign country up there, because we are known the world around the world now.
Let me ask you this question. Now, Punxsutawney Phil comes from a long line of groundhogs there in Punxsutawney.
Yeah, what's his pedigree?
Is it a family groundhog thing?
There's only ever been one Punxsutawney Phil. Punxsutawney Phil is 134 at least.
Holy! I'd go just to see that 134-year-old groundhog.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's a secret to this. Now, he gets the Elixir of Life.
Oh.
That's every September.
Wow.
So that's the secret. But you got... See, Phil also has a wife, and her name is Phyllis.
I don't think I knew that.
But now, Phyllis does not get the Elixir of Life.
Oh.
So about every 4 or 5 years, Phil gets a new wife.
Oh, no kidding.
So I consider him sort of like the Hugh Hefner of the Groundhog.
Oh. So he gets to keep a harem.
No, he only gets one at a time.
Does he spend a part of the year lounging around in silk pajamas, too? Or?
Yeah, sort of. He's got no smoking jacket. We'll find him every once in a while.
Don't forget the spats if you're going to go that far out. Yeah. Who's the keeper of the Elixir of Life? Is there a guardian?
Well, actually, the handlers are responsible for that. I know the recipe.
Oh, you do? So any chance we can get it?
Every year I get that question.
Is there a blood oath involved or anything like that? Or
Well, it takes a lot of work to make it, and you can always tell there have been some humans that have tried it. In fact, a couple of the guys in the inner circle have tried it. You can pick them out right away. They're either fat and or bald. So that's the effect on humans.
What's the typical length of time that the folks come in to participate? Is it just a day event, or do people come and spend the week in Punxsutawney? And if you do, how far in advance do you need to book a room?
Well, probably you'll have to book a room about 5 years in advance. We only have one hotel here in Punxsutawney. So what we do is we send people to neighboring towns, Du Bois, Indiana, Brookville. There are hotels. A lot of people are just day trippers. They'll drive in and do the thing and go on back home. This year, however, it's on Sunday morning, so we are expecting a massive crowd. They'll have Saturday for their drive day, and then they can drive back home Sunday. A lot of people just come and stay in their cars or whatever. During the week, it's a little different, but I'm still amazed. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is. I'm always amazed at how many people show up for Groundhog.
How many? How many people show up in town?
Right. We estimated a few years we've had close to 40,000 people.
Good God, wow. Big time! Yeah,
that's a lot of Whoa. People to bring into a small town of 6,000.
How big is the police force in Punxsutawney?
Well, that's the other thing we have. we have a pretty big security force when it comes to Groundhog Day. We bring in local state police, not only from this area, but they bring them in from other areas. We have National Guardsmen, we have firemen, we have local police. So it takes a big effort on everybody's part to make sure everybody has
you
a
guys do
safe
take this seriously, don't
holiday.
You? Amazing.
Yeah. Oh, we do. We do.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. If you're going to do it
it's
right.
A lot of serious fun.
Yeah.
All right, so let me ask you this question. Being that it falls this year on also Super Bowl Sunday, do you think that Phil, and whether or not he sees his shadow, will also be able to make some sort of a side prediction as to the outcome of the Super Bowl?
He's already done that.
Oh, well, he's already done that.
Hey, I think we have a picture here of our gentleman friend.
Paula, who was at the
she's got a picture.
The team that
there's
wears
Ron.
Red will win.
I'm just looking at a picture
of you,
Ron.
We got a picture of you, Ron.
Yeah.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Paula.
That's probably scary.
Turned out in your tails and everything there.
Is that a matter of personal, as far as your garb is concerned, or is that something that the stump warden is mandated to wear the top hat and all that?
Oh, no. All the guys in the inner circle must wear a tuxedo and a top hat. Now, the top hat is the symbol of royalty, and Phil is the king of the animal world. So that's why we do that.
All right.
Yeah.
Can I join? I'd like to be part of this.
Vince wants
you can, but you got to move to Punxsutawney.
Oh, there it is.
There's
right
always
there.
A catch, isn't there? Nothing against Punxsutawney, believe me. But I did have a friend of mine who lived there for a while. Oh, there he is. There's Phil himself.
Ron, it sounds like a terrific event. I've never attended. I would love
Paula's
to get there someday.
Paula's got a picture
someday.
Of Phil, the actual right. Phil right there, 34 years old.
Yeah, look at that. There he is in his containment vessel there. That's excellent. Ron, thank you for checking in. We do appreciate it.
It's
you
great.
Shed some light on the event here. You know, us folks here in eastern Pennsylvania who will long to get there. Maybe someday we will. And now it sounds like
that's
something we got to do.
Well, be hoping to see you then.
Well,
excellent.
Wonderful.
Ron,
okay.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
Okay, happy Groundhog Day.
Happy Groundhog Day.
Yes, I had an opportunity to enjoy Groundhog Day last year. It was a lot of fun. The people of Punxsutawney are very welcoming. And if you'd like to find out more, groundhog.org is their website. Now, don't go away. We have more Special Edition with the Rotary in New Milford coming up. Next on Special Edition, if you thought polio was completely eradicated, think again. We're going to meet David Palmer. He's with the Rotary Club, District 7410, and they're trying to get rid of it.
Tell us about the Rotary that you're involved with. Where's your area? Yes, I'm a member of the New Milford Area Rotary, Susquehanna County, just north of here, right on the New York State border. That's I would define that as the northernmost reach of the Rotary District, 7410. It's a huge district. We have 43 clubs, over 1,000 members, and our clubs go all the way to the New Jersey line, Matamoros, Milford, and down to Hazleton and out west to Wellsboro, Towanda, Sayre, Athens. Covers a huge area.
Wow.
And while our primary international effort is the eradication of polio, our clubs also participate in hundreds of other humanitarian efforts, both internationally and locally. For example, my club in New Milford, locally, we emphasize education and literacy, and we support, in collaboration with the United Way of Susquehanna and Wyoming County, as an example, a program called Real Men Read that takes mentors, primarily men, but not just men. There are women as well. We go into area elementary schools once a month and read to kindergarten students. It's an excellent program that gets right to the grassroots level and helping develop interest in reading with these children, but also putting a positive role model in front of them. That's one of our programs.
And it always interests me when I talk to people who get involved. How did you get involved?
Well, my involvement only goes back to 2013. At that point in my life, I retired from the Air Force. And
Thank you for your service.
You're welcome. Thank you. I had been encouraged for a number of years by a family friend to join the local Rotary Club. And I had kept telling her, I'll do it when I'm done with the military, because I'm too busy running all over the world with that. But at the same time, while I was in the military, I worked in international affairs for the last 3 years of my career. And I used to see what we would call NGOs, non-governmental organizations like Rotary, were doing all over the world. And I admired that and decided then as well that once I'm done, I want to get directly involved in that and help my world, not just my community, but the world as a whole. And I had also been influenced as a young high school student. My family hosted two Rotary exchange students, one from Japan and one from New Zealand. And that is a big program for Rotary as well. In fact, my club is hosting a student from France this year, and we have a student from our club that we're hosting, or not hosting, but basically have sent overseas to Croatia for a year. And closer to home, my youngest son, Grant, was an exchange student in the Philippines in 2005. And as an example of carrying on that service, he's a member of our club. He's our president of our club for the last 2 years now. And, he's in his early 30s, but he still is motivated by that Rotary experience that he had as a high school student many years ago. In fact, he called that year the best year of his life, and he still maintains friendships in the Philippines, much as I do with New Zealand exchange student and the Japanese exchange student from over 40 years ago. We still communicate regularly. I've had the opportunity to see the girl from New Zealand. She's not a girl anymore. She's a grown woman, but we've been able to visit each other just about every other year for the last 10 or 15 years. So
that's great.
Those relationships are, permanent, and they help build that common human aspect that we're looking for. We're all related in a sense, and we all have the same desires, to better our world and our communities.
And where did I see you've picked up the title governor?
I'm assistant governor.
Assistant governor.
Right. Right. We have in our district, we have it organized in this seven different regions for clusters, as we call them. And my particular cluster that I'm the assistant governor for includes the clubs, my own club in New Milford, also the club in Factoryville, Forest City, Tunkhannock, and Wailusing.
Oh.
So I assist our district governor, who, by the way, right now is in India, and she is performing a National Immunization Day, what we call NIDs, which happen all over the world. In this case, it's India, and she is helping distribute the polio vaccine to hundreds, possibly thousands, of little children, typically age 5 and under, in India. She'll have a lot to talk about when she gets home.
Tell us a little bit about that. When we hear polio, I think a lot of people would say there's so many other things, Dave, mm-hmm. that we're dealing with in the world that are coming around, mm-hmm. and you're still looking at polio? Why?
Yes, we're still working at polio. It's been a 30-plus year effort. Actually, it's more than 30 years. It started in the Philippines in 1979 when some Rotarians there saw it as a need because polio was raising such problems in the Philippines with their children. And then it has since morphed since the late 80s into a worldwide effort, not only by Rotary International, but we're also collaborating with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for the fundraising and the effort. And polio, up until probably 10, 15 years ago, when it was at its worst, so to speak, we had approximately 300,000 to 400,000 children every year who were suffering from polio.
Or are we talking worldwide?
Worldwide.
Oh, okay.
In the U.S., fortunately for us, polio has pretty much been eradicated, I'd say since the late 60s, early 70s. Throughout the world, it's still endemic in Pakistan and Afghanistan. And you can imagine if you pay any attention, if anyone pays any attention to the news, you can understand why it's still a problem there with the lack of security. We're still fighting this this ugly little virus there. We also occasionally has reared its ugly head in Nigeria, but for the last 3 years now, it has not been surveilled, as we like to call it. There's a surveillance program as well involved in this, and it hasn't reared its ugly head in Nigeria for 3 consecutive years, so it's considered eradicated there. So
wow.
We're down to as I said, Afghanistan and Pakistan, although we still have to maintain our surveillance programs and our immunization programs throughout the world because children are born every day.
It's, mm-hmm.
And thus the effort in India, which has been polio-free since about 2012, about 7-8 years polio-free, but we still require these surveillance programs, and including the NIDs, the National Immunization Days.
How would you go about getting involved there?
Mm-hmm. Well, Rotary is worldwide. We're in, I believe, 100 and don't quote me on statistics, but I think it's about 130 countries worldwide where Rotary clubs exist, and that's typically how we enter a particular country. We'll go through the Rotarians and the Rotary clubs there, because we strive to be non-governmental and non-religious. We're open to any and all cultures and peoples, and that helps us get our foot in the door, so to speak, in a lot of these countries, because we're not government, you know, related. I mean, we have to use some of the government services, whether it be security, transportation, but we are a non-governmental organization, an NGO, as I alluded to earlier, and that helps us get our foot in the door.
So you have a Rotary in Afghanistan?
Yes, there are Rotary clubs in Pakistan, Afghanistan, not a lot, not many, but they're predominantly, many times they're in urban settings, urban areas that have more services, but they are able to, you know, spread their effort out into the rural areas and into the countryside.
When you go to one of these countries, what happens? As you said, your governor is mm-hmm. there now.
She's there now, yep. Karen DiMatteo, she's a member of the Stroudsburg Club.
Mm-hmm.
But when Karen and there are literally dozens of other Rotarians from around the world that are there with her, and when they arrive there, they're met by their Rotary host, the particular club in that part of India, which I don't have with me right now, but their host Rotary Club has already laid the groundwork for this effort, and they meet them there, basically get them settled into their hotels, They do some touring initially so that they can get introduced and exposed to the culture and the traditions in that particular country or maybe in that particular part of that country. And then after they've had their introduction to the country, then they get out into the countryside, so to speak, and actually administer these polio viruses. Most of it is with the mouth. It's a liquid virus that administered.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. Do they have to be medical professionals?
They don't. They get some training, some fundamental training on little ice packs that they take with them,
and all that's there.
It's all there
when they arrive.
Right. Right. They're just coming in there for an opportunity for them to, exhibit their desire to service before self, as one of our mottos, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about service and gives them the opportunity to do that without having to worry about logistically setting this up in a foreign country. The Rotary host at that club in that country do that.
You always want to have more folks get involved in Rotary.
Mm-hmm.
But are there things that just typical people can do in order to help the effort? Do you have to mm-hmm. raise funds?
Yes. Yes. As with any organization or any effort like this, funding is a big part of our effort, and it has been for many years. We, in our district is an example right now, we have realized approximately $15,000 this year in our funding effort. And we go by a fiscal year of July to July, so we're about halfway through our fiscal year, and we've realized at this point about $15,000 in collections for the in Polio Now effort. And some of that money has come about by efforts. For example, in this past summer, we had a ball game at the Rail Riders
mm-hmm.
on Montage Mountain. We raised, if I remember right, we raised about $3,000 there with a ball game, and we had a good time doing it. We've also, this a week from this Friday, actually, we are hosting a hockey game with the Penguins.
They'll be home.
They're playing the Phantoms, the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. So we're raising some funds by selling tickets for that effort. And the Penguins organization is a big help with us. And we're trying to use the fact that it's a game with the Phantoms as well, the Lehigh Valley Phantoms, to build up a little energy.
The Turnpike rivalry.
Right, exactly. And then our clubs themselves, individually, on October 24th of 2019 was what we call World Polio Day. And for that effort, our clubs are encouraged to do individual fundraising efforts. For example, Pennies for Polio is a big popular effort, especially with our Rotary clubs that are in place in our high schools, what we call Interact clubs. We have a number of those throughout the region, and they like to do the Pennies for Polio effort, where they literally collect pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters, whatever it may be, for not just October 24th, but typically maybe the whole month of October.
Oh, wow.
And then they'll culminate with their October 24th.
And sometimes we forget that the change is actually money.
Yes, yes, and it means a lot. This effort, although it takes millions and millions of dollars to effectively deliver it in the world, the actual delivery of the virus is a matter of like a dollar. It's extremely efficient, and it's designed to be that way because we use volunteers and as much contributive labor as we can possibly get. Our typical goal last year in the United States was $50 million. And
it sounds like a lot, but when you've been telling me the places you go, it almost doesn't sound like enough.
Yeah. Well, it's for the United States, for our clubs, that was our goal. And we actually met that. And what we like too is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation matches that 2-for-1. So we effectively raised $150 million with the effort and cooperation with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So it's an expensive proposition.
I'm going to ask you to take out your crystal ball now. And when you look in that crystal ball, do you see polio one day being, gee, Now all we Rotarians have to come up with something else.
Something else, right? And we're already talking about that because we see the end in sight. You know, with the last two endemic countries being Pakistan and Afghanistan, I'm an eternal optimist, so I'm going to predict that 3 years from now, we'll be able to come here and tell you that it's now been eradicated because we haven't seen it rear its ugly head in Afghanistan and Pakistan for the last 3 years. So the world is polio-free. That doesn't mean that we can't, you know, keep our defenses up and keep immunizing children, keep doing surveillance programs and so forth. But I'd say 3 years from now, it'll be over with.
When you go into a country and you administer the vaccine, then do they have to have follow-up on their own, or is it one and done?
No, there's follow-up that's typically provided by the indigenous, you know, the local medical professionals and so forth. And then the surveillance program, part of that is actually going into the wastewater treatment facilities, which, as you can imagine, in some countries really don't exist. But there are still sewage issues that have to be surveilled and monitored. And that's where this ugly little virus likes to make its home, in sewage. So those programs will continue once again forever, as well as the monitoring, you know, of the children and delivering the polio vaccine, typically with that little drop in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. And that's all it takes.
Yep.
You've never been on one of these?
No, I have not. It's one of my goals.
So maybe within the next 3 years, you'll be able to be over there when they say,
"Right,
here's the last one and you're going to get it."
Yeah. Or personally, because of my son's connection to the Philippines, an exchange student, personally, I'd like to go to the Philippines, sometime and help do one of these NIDs. That's in my bucket list.
And how do you get selected to go?
There's an application process through Rotary International that you apply for, and for the most part, it's at your expense as well. It's at your cost, so you've got to do some savings as well, unless you're independently wealthy, which I don't think most of us are not. But
and if someone was listening and they heard you talking about it and say, well, maybe I'd like to donate to that effort, is that also possible as well?
Oh, yes. We're always open to donations. If you go to Google, Polio Global Eradication Initiative, I know that's a long one. Google any version of the word polio eradication, you'll come up with the website where you can go to and you can donate. You can also, there's features on there that can tell you other ways you can help, maybe through media, public media, or in your local schools. Maybe you want to go out and do some outreach there. Or even better yet, maybe you decide, I want to join Rotary and I want to participate in this effort. We have a Facebook page. Our club has a Facebook page. The district has a Facebook page. Rotary District 7410, if you Google that, it'll come right up for you. A number of different options. So
I put in polio and Rotary.
Polio and Rotary.
And Rotary. And boy, did I get, that took me a while to find you.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I did.
If you have any kind of motivation, you can find the way to get there. It's, as I like to joke and say, Google is a wonderful thing. I hope I'm not doing any advertising that we're not supposed to do here. But
I didn't hear a word. Yeah. Dave, what would you like to leave our listeners with for this effort right now?
Well, I guess obviously I'm hoping that they will contribute to this effort. Go in on your laptop or your computer and find where you can do that. And I guess my final motivation is that for a number of years in my military career, I taught some programs that prepared military members to go overseas and provide security assistance without getting into the tangled details. But one of my points that I always made to my students was no matter where you go in the world, whether it be Afghanistan, Pakistan, United States, Canada, Mexico, I don't care where you go, the one fundamental principle that applies to all of us, no matter our culture, is our desire for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, those are we find those articulated in our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution. It's all about, you know, this great country of the United States, but it applies worldwide. Every mother and father fundamentally want to provide health, life, liberty, happiness to their children. Doesn't matter what language they speak, what culture they come out of, what religion they decide to follow. And I think that's what makes Rotary so attractive to me as well, because we are all about service, and we don't care what your color your skin is, or your nationality, or what language you speak. We all have the same at heart, same effort. So if you have that, I would encourage you to also consider joining Rotary.
Thanks to David Palmer for joining us, and you can always go online and find out about how you can join the local Rotary in your area and join other Rotarians from around the world. Coming up next, you asked for her, Dawn Webster, back with head lice information. Welcome back to Special Edition. I'm Paula Degnan. There are certain words that when we hear them, they give us a certain reaction. If you hear the words head lice, you just might start to itch. Physician's assistant Dawn Webster has details. Dawn Webster, this is probably one of those topics that no one talks about. How often do you see head lice at your facility?
We see it a good bit, actually. And a lot of the times when we do see it, it's people that come in because they're not sure. They're not sure if they have it. You know, they're not sure if their kids have it. They've never had it before. So they come in and they want us to take a look and see what's going on.
Or what would bring someone in to say, I think there's something going on here?
So a lot of times they get letters at school or daycare saying that there's an infestation, that kids in their class or in their preschool room or their daycare room do have head lice. So they'll come in and they'll say, oh, I'm kind of itchy. But the problem is, as soon as you hear that someone has head lice, you get itchy.
Yes.
So, it's kind of tough. So a lot of times they'll come in and they'll want us to take a look. And that's the only way you can tell. You have to look. You have to kind of comb through the hair. Part it with your, with a comb or your hands and really look close to the scalp.
What are head lice?
Well, head lice are essentially little bugs. They crawl, they don't jump or fly, but that's how they get around. They crawl with their legs.
Yeah, we do hear about them, even though we don't talk about them too loud.
So the problem is, they can be tough to get rid of, especially in kids. A lot of times little ones, they may feel like their head's itchy, but they're not going to tell you. And, it doesn't hurt. So a lot of times they'll tell you something hurts, but if something's just itchy, they're not going to say anything at first. And unfortunately, by the time they do say something, a lot of times, it's pretty well spread.
Is there a time of the year that they seem to be more active?
No, I mean, really, it's not time of the year or, climate specific. It's kind of just, in the school year, during the school year when kids are together, you're more likely to see it spreading and hear more about it just because, during the summer when kids are home, they're not as likely to be around other kids quite as often.
Adults aren't totally immune to all of this happening to them either, correct?
Correct. No, it's any age can get it. And typically adults do get it from their kids, from either, sleeping in the same bed as them or, just laying on the couch with them, watching TV. The easiest way for it to spread is head-to-head contact. So, laying on the couch side by side, sitting on the couch side by side, essentially your head touching their head. It can also spread by sharing brushes or pillows or hats. It's just not quite as common because they don't live very long on inanimate objects. They have to feed in order to stay alive.
Well, that was going to be my next question. When you're out and about, you might be on a bus, you might be in a vehicle, you don't know where they are, right? Because they're so tiny?
Yeah, I mean, you can see them. But yeah, they are. I mean, they are little. And if you're not looking for them, you know, on something, you're not going to see it. But it is hard for them to live on, you know, inanimate objects. Their legs are, you know, is specifically developed to hold on to hair shafts, really hold on well to things like couches. Typically what would happen is they would be on, you know, someone's hair that is on the couch now or in the hat. So it's not that they're coming, they're not jumping off of the hair and landing on the couch. They're, you know, someone has a couple hair strands that are on the couch. The lice are on those hair strands. And then that's how you get it.
So we don't want anyone who is listening to think that, well, I'm clean. I wash my hair every day. But that really doesn't have much to do with the transference, correct?
Correct. No. And they actually say that lice prefer clean hair. So you know, that's one of the things. You wash and dry your hair, it's not going to affect them at all. They live right through that, essentially. They have to be, you know, washed in very, very hot water and then put in the dryer, and they have to hit a minimum temperature of, I don't even know what it is. It's hot, though, and it's got to be like an extended period of time, like 40 minutes. So like 40 minutes in the dryer for a hat to kill, you know, the lice in the their eggs or the nits that, you know, may be in there.
And first of all, is it something that you would need to see a medical professional for?
No, not unless you're not sure, you know, and a lot of times at schools, like, kids will go to the school nurse to be checked because it is hard to look at your own hair. The problem is they're really close to the scalp and they're hard to see. So it's kind of tough to, you know, look at your head that closely. If you're not sure or you've never seen it before, then yeah, definitely, you know, you can go to any medical, you know, provider to take a look and just kind of give you some reassurance if it is or is not. School nurses also are great at it to treat it. The products are actually over the counter. There are prescription versions that really aren't very different, but some insurances cover it. So a lot of times if someone wants their insurance to cover it, they'll come in and ask for a prescription for it. But the most important part of the treatment process is getting all of the eggs or nits out. A lot of times those eggs won't be killed by the actual, you know, shampoo or solution you're putting on the hair. You actually have to comb them out, and they are stuck to those hair strands. So they a lot of the treatments come with a special comb, and you're, you know, really supposed to go over every single area of hair to make sure there's no little eggs still attached. The lice themselves and the eggs are typically no further than a quarter inch away from the scalp. So they feed on the scalp. The eggs need to essentially stay warm. So they're only going to be up close to the scalp. So they sell shampoo that has essential oils in it, like tea tree, mint. And these essential oils are natural repellents. If there were, you know, a live louse to jump on their hair, if they have that scent, they're going to kind of jump off. They don't like that. If your kids get a bath at night, like mine do, the shampoos aren't going to help. The shampoos and conditioners only last about 8 hours. So if you're bathing your kids in the morning, you can use the repellent shampoos and conditioners, and they're going to work for the whole day while they're at school. But if they bathe or shower at night, then your best bet is going to be to get the hair spray, and it's like a conditioner detangler spray that also has the repellent essential oils in it, and you can spray their hair in the morning before you brush it or braid it or comb it. And then that will also last about 8 hours.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. A production of Intercom Communications.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.